This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are it.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Yeah, I've got some numbers, and I don't think you're going to like them, but I'm going to read them, and then we're going to try to see what the pattern is that emerges. It's coming up here in just a moment. I will say at 8:30, we're going to open up the phone lines and hear from you guys. Would like to know what you think is the biggest challenge the Mariners have faced here to start the year. Self-imposed. What is the biggest problem? Why is this team off to such a slow start? My numbers, Brock, I think will tell you what I think the issue is. The Mariners are in the league as of last night, 27th in hits, 28th in doubles, 25th in home runs, 29th in slugging. My opinion on what's wrong? Power. Yes, they're not getting enough hits, but they're not hitting for any juice. They're not hitting for any power. And in today's game, you have to do that. Julio, zero home runs. Garver, zero home runs. Raley, zero home runs. Ty France, zero home runs. Those four guys together have zero home runs so far on the year. And Raley's not played every day. I'm not necessarily crushing him for it, but he's got to run into some. That's part of why he's on this roster. And Julio and Garver, those guys have to hit home runs in order to for this team to function the way it's supposed to function. So you want to know why I think what I think is the problem? It's that. I know everyone was excited about the emphasis on contact. I know everybody was excited that the strikeouts were supposed to be cut down. Obviously, that has not happened so far. But I never agreed with that. I never fully got it. You got to hit home runs to win in the modern game of baseball. You have to.
You do.
The pitching is too freaking good, night in, night out. The Mariners' pitching is great. Guess what? So is almost everybody else you're going to play. You've got to find ways to beat the guys that are great. And the best way to do that, in my view, is not to sit around hoping you're going to string together six hits in an inning. The best opportunity you have is to wait for a mistake and punish it and put it in the stands. And they have not gotten that from some of the guys that they expected from. And they don't have enough guys on this team, in my view, who put the ball out of the ballpark consistently enough for their offense to function the way I would want it to.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to argue against that. And to your point, Salk, maybe it's just because it's early, right? And arms haven't gone down, and you haven't seen the war of attrition that you inevitably see over all of baseball, where you get, I think, league average last year was like 13 starters over the course of 160 some games. Obviously, some of those are openers and bullpen days and everything else. But right now, this first month out of the gate, you kind of get everybody's best shot.
Right.
And what else strikes me, like one of the biggest differences between when we started this thing 15 years ago to today, is back in the day, you were like, oh, get to that bullpen.
Yeah.
Just get to that bullpen.
Not anymore.
And now you get to the bullpen, and it feels like every team has got at least three dudes that are filthy. Filthy. And you're almost like, no, don't get to the bullpen. Like, do some damage here, because some of these guys, now, not again, it's early and in April when everybody's got all of their arms.
Yeah.
It probably feels like that even more than it certainly
but
will.
I would stay over the course of a series, Brock. You do still need to get to the bullpen and make them use up some of those guys.
Those
on
top
night
three
one.
Bullpen
right.
guys. Yes. So you can get to
not
five
available
and six
on night
and seven.
Two or three
yes.
because
yes.
most teams are still not 26 deep or 13 nope. deep when it comes to pitching. So I think a lot of that stuff, well, you're right, it has changed. Clearly, the bullpen is no longer a collection of guys who just didn't make it.
Correct.
The guys at the end are still hanging on. They're still hanging on for dear life. And if you can get a team, keep a game close, take enough walks, drive up the pitch count, force them to use as many guys as they can, eventually you're going to find the guy who makes one or two mistakes.
Yes.
And then you got to hit home runs when you have that opportunity to do it.
Yep.
So I've never been fully comfortable with this strategy.
But you say that, but strategy-wise, like, Mitch Garver's supposed to be a 25 home run guy.
Yep.
Polanco's, it's not like they brought in lightweights all across the board.
No.
Mitch Garver's supposed to be that. Julio's supposed to be a 30 to 40 home run guy. Ty France is, you know, supposed to develop a swing change and been more efficient and add a little bit more pop and be a 15 to 20 home run guy. So it's not like they brought in Willie McGee and Vince Coleman
no.
all over the board.
True.
I mean, Luke Rayleigh hit 19 bombs. He's supposed to be a play every day, or if he were to play every day, it could be a 15 to 20 home run guy. So you should be getting some of that. Polanco was a 30 home run guy, and he's given you a couple of nice jolts here early on and is on pace to hit over 20. So it's, yeah, they just tried to bring in a little more contact, but I wouldn't say that was totally at the cost of some of the power, because those guys in Julio and in Garver are supposed to be your power guys, and they're sitting on goose eggs in the home run column right now. That's hard to absorb.
Well, the goose eggs are a challenge. I mean, there's no doubt. And so I started off the show by saying that's been maybe the most frustrating part of this whole thing is every take, every sort of attempt to figure out what it is that's really going on. It ends up kind of being foiled by, but the people aren't doing what it is they were brought in to do. Right? Yeah, you're right. Brock, you just made some good points. I'm frustrated because I feel like they traded a little bit of power for contact. But the guys who they brought in to make contact aren't making contact, and the guys who are supposed to still have power aren't hitting for any power. How do you judge the decision making when the guys just aren't living up to anything close to what the expected level is supposed to be?
Yeah. And then, you know, the other challenge with this is, unlike I think the other sport that I cover, where I'm like, okay, I see what they're trying to do. Okay. I see they're trying to max protect and take shots. Okay. I see they're trying to play quick game. Okay. I see they're trying to slide the line and do these things. And, you know, you can kind of get a feel. This is also one of those situations where, like, we don't see behind the scenes exactly how they're trying to take apart each game plan each night, right? Because that was supposed to be some of the thought process, that each and every night, Salk, we play this game to win this game with this kind of style, right? And Mitch Haniger talked about, hey, man, we're playing the odds, and when we get these pitches and we get these hands in our favor, we got to take advantage of it. I don't even know how to judge that, right? I don't know that if some of these strikeouts are because, well, you know, tip your cap. That wasn't in the plan. They weren't really looking to do damage on some of that. Or this guy, you know, has pitched so backwards, they were going into it with a game plan of X. And you know what? The opponent gave them Y, and it just kind of crossed up a lot of the wires. And, you know, similarly to our Seahawks conversation of, hey, let's remember, it's a lot of new pieces and a lot of new scheme and a new offensive coordinator in place here that's also trying to find his bearings with his personnel and exactly how they want to attack this thing day in and day out.
All that I think is very true. I'm going to come back, though, to what Aaron Goldsmith told us, which is that there may only be three, four guys on the roster that are actually doing what it is that they were, you know, supposed to do in terms of buying into that process. And that's, of all the things I've heard, a little concerning.
I wonder if that sit down yesterday was also for some of that as well. You know, to your biggest star, just a reminder that, hey, man, you know, and that's total speculation on my part, because Scott said very clearly it was a mental day, right? A refresher day, get away from the game kind of day for Julio. But, you know, is that also part of it? Because it's been the last couple of years. You know, there have been these stretches with Julio where it's like, no, man, hit it the other way. Nope, put it on the ground. Hey, nope, we're going to ask you to do this. And at times it's been a little bit of friction. It certainly was over some stretches last year. And then he just goes off the rails crazy from a production standpoint and carries this team. And you know, wouldn't that be nice to just see him get ignited to get this thing going?
Yeah. Well, if you want to know what my feeling is, it's power. You got to have power to win in the modern game. And I just don't believe they've shown nearly enough of it. That to me, and again, something that should improve. But as of right now, that is what I think is the biggest problem this team has had. We'll ask you guys that question coming up in 20 minutes after everything you need to know next. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
It's too bad that they couldn't have just kept some of that momentum from Friday, because honestly, Brock, that was a pretty well-played game on Friday. They hit the ball decently well. Bryce Miller was phenomenal. We talked a lot about his need to go deeper into games and to put guys away or to find ways to pitch to contact, and he did all of that on Friday, going 7 2/3, dominant, honestly, and then unfortunately it all just kind of came crashing down. The offense did absolutely nothing on Saturday. They did basically the same thing yesterday, and then Julio gets picked off to end the game in the ninth inning after being put in as a pinch runner, Scott says, yeah, that's not really what cost us the game.
Yeah, you know, everybody's going to get fired up. That's not the play that cost us the game. We had opportunities certainly there in the seventh and the eighth. You know, Julio's our fastest runner. Certainly going to put him in the game. Guy made a good move and obviously picked him off. So, it happens. But that's for me, that's not the play that cost us the game.
No, that felt like a missed field goal at the end of the game. Not even a missed field goal. Like, you know, I don't know, something that just runs out where you're trying to be aggressive. Julio's trying to be aggressive, has trying to get to second base there in that situation. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, they made the critical play, Saul, when it mattered there. You know, one of my favorite bites, honestly, from spring training this year was when Cal Raleigh looked us right in the eye and just said, I'm kind of done. I'm done with this narrative about us being a one-dimensional pitching-only team. Like, we got to hold up our end of the bargain. Pitching has been great. That was three straight quality start, quality yep. start, quality. Emerson Hancock gives you quality start, quality start, putting you in a position to go out there and win. And I think, the pitching, five of their six wins, those pitchers have given up one run or less this year. So the pitching has held up their end of the bargain. But as Cal said, if we want to change that narrative, there's only one way to do it. Go out there and hit and tell a different story. And yeah. that, unfortunately, 10% of the way in has not been happening.
Probably the best news from the weekend. Luis Castillo looked like Luis Castillo again yesterday. Lots of swing and misses. That's something that they needed to see.
It was 23 or 24.
Yeah, it was tied for the most in any game pitch this year. Dominic Canzone, unfortunately, going to go to the IL. He collided with the wall yesterday. Now he's got a sprained AC joint in his shoulder. His three home runs actually leading this team. Sounds like young Jonathan Classe is going to come up and take his spot. He's got a ton of speed. We'll see whether or not he's able to use it in the big league. So as bad as things feel today, and they do feel pretty lousy, they're a whopping two games out of first place, and they got the Reds in town for three. George Kirby tonight will take on Frankie Montas in Cincinnati.
Here's the second thing you need to
Brock,
know.
What do we know about Lakin Tomlinson, whose name we've heard quite a bit, and now he is going to be a guard for the Seahawks?
What we know about him is he is a big, physical Iron Man. I mean, he posts. He's been a guy over his entire career, including with the Jets last year, that doesn't miss games, that he sucks it up and is physically tough, is mentally tough. At this stage of the game, the reason he's on the market is he's not the most agile. I think pass block, rate, according to Pro Football Focus, in the second half of starting offensive guards. But for Seattle, I mean, that's better than Phil Haynes and Bradford has certainly been. And, just an area of exposure on your roster going into this draft was the interior of the offensive line. It was either going to be Lakin, it was going to be Whitehair, it was going to be Von Roten, and ultimately they settle on Lakin. And I think that durability, a big, big reason why.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Did you enjoy watching the Masters this weekend? Did you enjoy Scottie Scheffler closing things out, which is just what he seems to be best at? I mean, he just closes. You put him in position to win, and he wins.
Yep. Yep. And if that putter is working at all, with the way he strikes the ball, the way he hits the ball, Salk, he is in a position tournament after tournament after tournament after tournament to win. Now his second green jacket down there in Augusta. I think he's going to be one of those guys, and you look up, that tournament in particular just feels like there's some guys that play that course beautifully mm-hmm. and really have a feel for it, and there's others that just can't really play it consistently well. He's going to be on that former list, and I bet you we see his name on that leaderboard for a long, long, long time.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, the way he's playing, it is spectacular.
He just has like a consistency. You watch Rory McIlroy, there was a, I think it was on, was Friday the really windy day? Friday was a really yeah. windy day. And you watch Scheffler, he'll just shape a shot and he'll hit it a little bit differently and he'll mm-hmm. cut it through the wind. And there's still McIlroy like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to hit that shot? Oh, goes into the pond.
You know, it's funny. Brandel Chamblee, who I've told you before, I think is as good an analyst as you're going to find in sports, did a fantastic job breaking down that almost exactly what you just said after the round yesterday uh-huh. and showing how, Morikawa, was that on 9-10? Where was it that Morikawa had the double and he had the birdie, and it seemed like from there on it was sort of it's off over. And running yep. and he said, well, but look at the difference. Morikawa had to hit a cut there because he didn't feel comfortable hitting a draw. Mm-hmm. Scheffler, who likes to hit a cut, hit a draw and ends up birdieing the hole, whereas Morikawa got himself in trouble, and then you're sort of off to the races. So
yeah, that ability to process the game,
yeah,
it is so heightened in all of these sports we watch. Caitlin Clark going to get drafted number one of the Fever tonight. The speed at which she processes the game is ahead of everybody else. We talk about it with all these quarterbacks in the draft process and everything else, how they process the game. We talk about it with hitters, how they can process spin and how they can see things. And the greatest of them seem to have a sense of it, right? Whether it is innate, God-given, or it's trained or whatever it is. But Scheffler is a golfer. You just watch him process and you're like, good luck, man. Because that dude is just playing at a different level than everybody else.
No doubt about it. All right, that's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour. I guess I should play this. It's kind of fun. At the end of the tournament yesterday, there was a very nice moment, a goodbye to Vern Lundquist, who has been one of the greats over the years. And here is the little interaction between him and Jim Nance.
Vern wrote a book back in 2018 called Play by Play. And the last line in the book that you wrote, Vern, I want to apply it to you. You said, thanks, to borrow a phrase, thanks for the memories. Your voice has been a beautiful instrument. Thank you for a wonderful soundtrack for all of our lives.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Yeah, Vern a little choked up there, huh? Wasn't quite able to get through that.
You know who loves Vern, I would bet?
Who?
Pete Carroll. Because Vern, unlike me, just uses very few words to say very poignant things.
Very true.
Yes.
Vern used to do football, right?
You did. Actually, when I started with the Seahawks doing preseason games, doing pre and post game radio, the guy on the call on television was one Vern Lundquist.
Oh, really?
Who they would fly from Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Interesting.
Yes, he did that. For a couple of years, he and Warren Moon were the TV side of that thing. And you talk about just, you can ask anyone with the Seahawks, anybody that's ever been around Vern Lundquist, just a lovable guy.
Is that true?
Oh, gosh. There was a lot of like Dave Niehaus to him in just when he spoke. Folks, you just listened, right? Wasn't the biggest guy, you know, stature-wise and everything else, but just a powerful voice. And
why do you have to talk about his size? Why is that necessary for you, Brock? Why is it necessary that you bring up his size? You know what? Stop talking. You're done for a few minutes. We're going to open up the phone lines. 866-979-3776. The man retired after this unbelievable career, emotional moment. Yes. He's crying on the air with Jim Nance at the Masters. And you're like, well, he's short. He's kind of small.
Little Vern.
I mean, just a little guy. Like, jeez, what is wrong with you? You have a disease.
Huge presence.
You have
what
a disease.
Saying,
yeah, but
huge,
you have to bring up the other part.
Huge presence.
Stop it.
And it didn't take
all
a huge
enough.
Frame.
866-979-3776. What is wrong with you? 866-979-3776. I would like to open up the phone lines. I would
on
like
my birthday.
To hear people.
I'd like full phone lines on my birthday.
Okay, for Brock, please.
And be somewhat civil. Can we be somewhat civil and just have a civil baseball conversation?
What
on
is
my
the biggest
birthday?
Problem with the Mariners right now? What's the biggest problem? They are not playing very well to start this season at all. They find themselves behind the eight ball, not with the kind of start that they wanted. What's the biggest problem? That's next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, 866-979-3776 is the phone number, and the question is fairly simple. What's wrong? Why do the Mariners look the way they do? What is the problem so far this year, the biggest problem that you see as you've watched this team kind of limp their way to the start of this season? It has not looked the way it's supposed to, even the way it was designed to. And I think that's maybe the most frustrating thing to me. It's one thing if you design something, Brock, and the design is just broken.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't even working the way it was designed to work, which is what's so freaking annoying. Because it's hard to judge the decision making when guys are so far below. Below what you would expect them to be.
Yeah. My answer is probably a little more just the totality of the offense struggles everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think you leaned into some of the power. Here is a couple striking numbers for you, Salk. How many home runs have they hit this year so far in 16
12.
Games?
12.
They have 13 home runs. Okay. 16 games, 13 home runs. Last year at this point, 15 home runs. So not a ginormous difference. Remember how slow, you know, things started last year. But last year, doubles, to your point about just power, like, come on, man, extra bases, slugging. Last year at this point, they had 34 doubles. This year they have 15.
Right.
Yeah. So 15 doubles, 13 home runs in 16 games.
Really, really hard to win when you're not hitting for any power. It's why they are 29th in the league in slugging percentage, which kind of takes all of that into account. All right, let's hear from the people. 866-979-3776. We'll start with Chris in Everett. Chris, good morning. What's up?
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, we do not have a true commitment to win with this club. Haven't forever. And for me, it just goes back to ownership and ultimately Jerry thinking that he can make magic out of B and C rated players. And it's just not going to happen.
So
the reality is.
Hey, just so I know. So explain that a little bit. Who are the B and C rated players?
I think Haniger. I'm sorry. I think Garver's a B player. I think Polanco's a B player. I think Urias is a C player. You know, I mean, kicking Gino down the road was an absolute huge mistake. Not only, you know, for what he does on the field. You know, you've talked a lot about defense, Sock, and you know, defensively. I mean, we have caved to try to like put, you know, a different set of characters on the field that are ultimately just doing the same thing over and over. It doesn't matter what the name on the back of the uni is. It's all the same stuff. And you see it over and over year after year. And what's the constant in that since 2016? It's, you know, ownership and Jerry. This recipe, you talked about the design doesn't work. And we've seen it for a long time. We've talked about a rebuild. And, okay, you know, and you've said it a million times, right? Our window of opportunity with this lot of pitchers and this core group is quickly passing us by. And there's not the commitment to win to take advantage of the homegrown talent that we have. And I just, you know, and I'm tired of, like, whenever anybody talks to Jerry or anybody talks to Stanton, you know, they're treated with kid gloves. I mean, ask some tough questions. Be like, hey, where's the commitment to win? Where's the true commitment to win?
I mean, those questions have all been asked, but whatever. Doesn't matter.
I don't know. I mean, not really.
No, you're right. You don't know. They have been asked. So,
and you don't like their answer.
What's wrong with the Mariners, not what's wrong with the people asking the questions of the Mariners. We've asked all of those questions. You don't like the answers that you're getting, but those questions have been asked, so I don't really know where else to go with that. In terms of the A versus B and C players, I think there's some really good points in there.
Mm-hmm.
Is Mitch Garver a B player? Is that what he is?
I mean, at his best.
Mitch Garver last year was
last
an 870 OPS guy.
Yeah, that's a B+ player.
Mitch Garver the year before that, not as good. 700 OPS, although that was right around league average.
Mm-hmm.
The year before that, 875.
A player.
So Mitch Garver's been a pretty good player the last few years, two of the last three, certainly, and five of the last six. I mean, he's been a really good player.
And he said he's a B player. Yeah, he's a B player.
And right now he's got a 472 OPS.
What is his RC plus?
I don't have that in front of me, but he's not hitting. His batting average is 156. How's that one for a number? And he's got zero home runs. I would say that tells you the whole story you need. Is that because he's a B player? Or is it because he's not hitting? I don't know the answer to him. He's not. Or is it because he's not as good a player as Gino Suarez? He had a much better season last year than Gino. If you look at two of the last three seasons, or just take the averages of the last three seasons, he's been a significantly better hitter than Gino Suarez.
Yep,
he's been terrible so far to start this year. Absolutely awful. The at-bats are bad. The contact is bad. The power is bad. He's been terrible to start this year. Over the last 3 years, been a better player than Gino Suarez. So I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah.
Is that because the Mariners aren't committed to winning? What does that mean?
Next caller. It's my birthday. Next caller. Next caller.
Okay.
I can do that on my birthday.
We're just going to go on to the next one.
Where's my Pete Carroll next?
Huh? Next?
Can I get my Pete Carroll next?
All right, let's go to Ray in Auburn. Ray, good morning. How are you, Ray?
Good morning.
What's
Happy
up?
Birthday, Brooke.
Thank you, Ray. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You are welcome. Analytics is killing us. I'm sorry, not a Scott Service fan. He doesn't let the players play. you know, he's always trying to match up this guy to that pitcher or this person to that fielding position, or he's just moving the guys around. Baseball is about superstition and attitude. And baseball is supposed to be a mental game, not like football where it's technique and muscle. I mean, he just isn't let the baseball players be baseball players. And they struggle a little bit. Let's give them another day off. Oh, they, you know, last year was our year. I bought all in. I have been a season ticket holder since the kingdom came down, and I'm not this year because of last year. Last year should have been our year. They let it get away from us. It just annoys me to no end. Okay. I can't drive. No.
We're focusing on this year, though, and the question is, what's wrong with them this year? And your answer is, Scott Servais is too analytical.
The wrong guys.
Too analytical.
Too analytical. Yeah. Brock, what do you make of that? Are the Mariners too analytical?
No, I mean, that's just baseball with all 30 teams, right? I mean, I'd really kind of push back at that one, Ray, and that's just the way the game is played today. Like it, love it, hate it, however you may feel about it. I think Scott and his crew make these decisions ahead of time. The hay is in the barn with who they're going to play, what matchups they want. All the numbers tell them, all the data. You may hate it. You may hate it, but that is today's game, and that's not a Scott Servais thing. That's an organizational thing that all 30 clubs out there. It'd be different, Salk, if there were three or four outliers out there that you could look at and go, look at the feel of that guy. Oh, look at the feel of, you know, that new skipper over there in the Cubs dugout. They paid all that money to, and they move on from Ross early, and they bring him in, and that guy just has a feel and an instinct. No, they play the same numbers. They're playing the same odds. They're looking at the same matchups. Well, they're moving their pieces around in very similar ways.
The Diamondbacks are probably the biggest example of the opposite, a team that last year was able to achieve significantly more than its talent because they played so hard into the analytics and took pitchers out at times that drove people crazy. And it all kind of worked for them last year.
Yeah, and I would push back on one other thing you said there, Ray, and I appreciate you guys' opinions. And we can all see this a little bit differently. And that's the beauty of sport, and that's the beauty of this forum as well. I think Scott's given these guys plenty of runway to go out there and get right. JP's, you know, leading off for 16 games, all the equity that he built a season ago, and he's really struggling right now. And he's given Mitch Garver lots and lots of at-bats and given Polanco lots of at-bats, finally moved him down the lineup a little bit, moved Ty up in the lineup as he started really, really well. So I think Scott gives these guys, that would be one real pushback. I think he gives them every opportunity to get themselves right.
All right, let me go to Mike in Auburn. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Happy birthday, Brock.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that down in Auburn. What you got for us?
I honestly believe it's not the fact that the Mariners have gotten B and C players, like you said, but more so when it matters the most, they seem like they're really excited puppy dogs and swinging the bat when they don't need to, but when there's nobody on, they're literally letting it go by them. Mitch Garver has not really swung at a decent pitch all season so far, and neither has JP, to be honest. I know he has two home runs basically out of the entire club, but no one really swings at what they need to, and when they need to swing, they just kind of let it go by and they kind of watch it go by.
Yeah, so to sum that up, swing decisions are the biggest problem with the Mariners so far.
Yes, absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I couldn't argue with that. I think that's very well said. I think their decisions on swings have been pretty lousy so far, Brock.
So bigger challenge this far, back to our first caller, is it your A players or your B and C players? You know, I think you stood on this ground really firmly last year, Salk, and even through this offseason and said, hey, man, like when push comes to shove, your stars need to shine. When push came to shove down the stretch and in September, as amazing as August was for Julio, and it fueled some numbers that were off the charts. Like, do your A players, is JP an A player? Is Cal an A player? Is Julio an A player? I think certainly a Julio and a Cal would be desired by just about every team in all of baseball across the whole planet to be their catcher and their center fielder. Is this been this start at 6-10? Been more about your B and C players or more about the struggle of a couple of your A players?
Challenging because it's been a little about all of them. No one's played particularly well to start this year, so it's what makes this conversation so broad, right? They've struggled in so many facets of the game. But yeah, I think you know where I'm going to fall on that. Julio's got to be Julio, or else it doesn't really matter what Luis Urias is.
Are those players as dependent, or is it a bunch of independent contractors? There's a lot of dependent players in other sports,
right?
Dependent on other people doing their job.
Julio's so, not dependent. Just go out and hit.
That's right.
I mean, just go out and hit. The pitching, I guess, maybe is the most dependent.
Mm-hmm.
There's some defense, some other stuff. But, yeah, I mean, for Julio, for Garver, for something, they're not dependent on anything. Just go out and hit the baseball and do what, you know, you're capable of doing. Let's keep this rolling. We'll go to Armin in Seattle. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
We can hear you great.
Yeah, well, lots of problems as far as I'm concerned. I'm not really happy with the pitching as compared to what we expected, but the single biggest deficiency to me is hitting with runners in scoring position. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if there you guys have stats on where they stand with all the other teams in batting average with RISP. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know over these three games, they were 3-for-23, and the two tough ones they lost over the weekend, Armin, they were a 1-for-15 combined. Mm. And that's just, unfortunately, yeah, not going to cut it. And I know we've gone back over the years and looked at it, you know, and I know for each of our teams that we care so much about, we seem to think they're the worst ever, right? Year after year, like, oh, man. I think last year they were about middle of the pack, maybe just near the bottom of the middle of the pack. And this year, I'm going to say, like all the rest of their offensive numbers through 16 games, Salk, it's probably going to be in the lower five.
Right.
Certainly the lower third as they've gotten this season going.
Yeah, I'm looking forward here to find the runners in scoring position.
I think I see it as 204.
And where does that – I mean, that's obviously not very good. Not really where you want to be. But you know what? It's pretty much right in line with how they've hit without runners in scoring position. Like, they just haven't hit. But clearly, if you can hit with runners in scoring position, you can make up for a lot of those deficiencies.
Can you give them some grace, Salk, in that philosophically, just the whole offense, when it's having this kind of outage, runners in scoring position, slugging, doubles, on-base percentage, average. The walks have gone up a little bit from the opening series. So over the last 12 games, there's certainly been an emphasis there, and that's improved. Is there any grace you give in that there are just so many new pieces in a new philosophical system?
Yeah, a little bit. I think more, you know, as odd as it sounds, I think they've actually faced some pretty good pitching and some pretty good teams, which is weird. The Red Sox weren't necessarily supposed to be that good, but they've played pretty well to start the year, and they've actually pitched a whole lot better than anybody thought they would. The Brewers, I think, are going to be a pretty good baseball team this year. The Cubs are looking like a pretty good team, and the two pitchers you saw the last 2 days, I know you were mad because they didn't get much. I'm blanking on the Japanese pitcher's name, but they actually scored the first run that guy's given up this year. He's pitched three games and allowed a total of one run. That doesn't make it any less frustrating when it's happening. But as you're sort of looking at the big picture, that does not explain the whole thing. I know someone's going to hear that. But Salk's making excuses and saying they're facing all aces. They're not. They're hitting like garbage. Some of it is exacerbated, I think, by the fact that they've seen some pretty good pitching. But you know what? Tough noogies. Tough. Go out and get hits. And you got tough pitching yourself. You got to find ways to win those
Since
games.
We didn't get the actual rank, by the way, for the runners in scoring position, worst is the Minnesota Twins. They're hitting 185. Then it's the Chicago White Sox, 200, then the Mariners at 204.
So they're 28th. Yeah, I mean, that's terrible. It's right in line with everything else that they're doing in the 25th to 30th spot, somewhere in that range offensively. Just brutal. All right, let me try Paul in Renton. Good morning, Paul. What's up?
Hey, good morning. Happy birthday, Brock.
Thank you.
I think one of the biggest things is the identity of this team, that they just don't know who they are yet. And I think a lot of that falls into what the offensive coordinator philosophy is and them trying to buy into that. Their situational hitting is obviously a concern because, as one caller mentioned earlier, is they're getting on base, but the runners in scoring position
is an issue. They're not getting on base. Hold on, let's start with that. They're not getting on base. That's not true. They're getting on base. I think they're 25th in the league or something like that. Like, they're not getting on base either.
But when they are on base, nothing comes of it.
When they're on base, they're hitting basically the same as when they're not on base, which is they're not doing a good job of getting hits.
Yes.
Well, then I think a lot of focus needs to be put on Brad Brown and what the offensive coordinator philosophy is there, because he was brought in specifically to improve the offense, to improve the strategy and try to understand what's going on there. And lastly, this is a side point, but Sebi Zavala has to go. He is not giving Cal Raleigh even a day off when he was supposed to have a day off, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on Cal longer in the year.
I got to tell you,
one little minor issue.
Paul, I got to tell you.
Go ahead.
Sebi Zavala is a real tough watch right now. I would have a hard time disagreeing with that. That has been, of all the things we've seen here so far this year, that's been the one where you're, and look, maybe he turns it around and he's totally fine. He's not done one thing of positive value to this team.
0-12, 5 strikeouts, no walks.
And the defense has been worse than the offense. Mm. Like, I don't even know what to say. He's been terrible.
A couple pass balls, threw a ball into center field. It's been a rough one for him.
It's really been a really bad start. The only saving grace is
old Murph is struggling in San Francisco. Everybody else is doing really well, yes. The Murph is at a really hard time getting it going down there in the Bay Area.
All right, let me try Mark in Brennan. What's up, Mark? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, guys, and congrats, Brock, to your daughter and your family. Just let's get that cowboy hat on.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks.
So Julio's anxious, and I'm not talking about getting thrown out at home or picked off at first or even as at bats. Julio's anxious to be a superstar, and that's got him that's a problem for Julio. He needs to relax. He needs to quit worrying about being a superstar. He just needs to get into a groove and start playing. If Julio is batting 250, and you said this a million times, Mike, this team goes as Julio goes, and I couldn't agree more. If Julio was batting 250 instead of 185, they'd be 500. If he was batting 285, they'd be a game or two over 500.
Well, or put regardless a couple of home runs out to that
the guys
number,
are doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, forget the batting average. How about a hit a home run or two? I mean, that's sort of one of the big things he's paid to do, and he's not doing it. I don't mean to bring his money in. Like, that's one of the reasons that you've got him on the team.
Yep.
I actually agree with that point quite a bit. I think Julio has, unfortunately, as crazy as it sounds, given the personality, I think he has potentially struggled a little bit with trying to become a superstar and some of the challenges that are that are a part of that.
Yeah, just trying to do too much. Sometimes what can be your greatest blessing can be your biggest curse too. Mm. And sometimes, Salgan, we've talked about this and praised it, and I never wanted to change his love affair with his audience, right? How much he is connected to that audience and the no-fly zone. But you also, with that comes, man, I gotta perform. Perform not just for myself. I got to perform not just for my teammates. I got to perform for my audience. I want to put on a show for these guys.
He wants it so badly.
Yes, he does.
Really hard to play baseball when you want it that badly.
I think there's a reason that 99.99, when we try to find comps for that, right? I think that there is a reason that so many become, I don't want to say totally insulated in that way, or because it's just hard to carry all of it. It's hard to carry it yourself. It's hard to carry it for your team. It's hard to carry it for, well, throw in all of your fans that you do love and adore and who love and adore you as well.
Let's try Stanley in Seattle. Good morning, Stanley.
Hey, Brock. Hey, Mike. Happy birthday, Brock.
Oh, thanks, Stanley. Appreciate that.
I just wanted to reiterate one of the previous callers talked about, and I hate to say this too because I really like him. I think Scott Servais is the major problem for the Seattle Mariners.
How come?
Not only is he not letting the players play, but also, too, he's not motivating. Okay, I listened to his post-game talk, and he's talking about, well, it's early and this and that, and we're not doing this and that. But this behavior for the Mariners is becoming habit-forming. And when you get habit precedent of being very important, then it's going to continue to follow you right along through the season, just like last season, too.
What does it mean?
So I'm sorry to have to say that.
What does it mean that he's not letting the players play?
Well, I think he's trying to match up player for player. If a pitcher from one team has got certain stuff, he's trying to put in a player for us that's going to match that, and or he's pulling a player out and pinch hitting for somebody who he thinks is going to be able to match up well against this left-hander is going to do. I haven't seen it working. I've been a season ticket holder for many years. I've been following the Mariners since I got here in 77.
Mm-hmm.
And but mainly what I think, you guys, is that the team looks like it's in a funk. And it just seems that way, that it's been that way for not just this year, but other years too. Yeah, they have periods of time where they really play well, but it hasn't been persistent. It hasn't lasted. And, you know, I hate to say that because I think Scott is a good man, and I think he knows baseball, but he's not motivating the Mariners.
Yeah, motivation and analytics. Stanley, thank you for the phone call. Motivation and analytics, Salk. I was chatting with the basketball coach about this in this recruiting process, and it was interesting. He said, you know what I really miss? And by the way, I kind of disagree with a lot of what Stanley had to say, and I think you do as well, but that's his opinion. He said, you know what I really miss? I really miss the day and age when I could coach 20 years ago and I could really coach. Now I have a staff of 10. Now we have all this data. Now we have, I hardly get any, like my famous word, right? That connective tissue with the players that I used to have. And it's interesting, analytics versus feel. It's a great debate in sport. 30 teams in baseball, all of them are falling so much more on the side of analytics mm-hmm. than they do feel. That these numbers, these odds, they bear it out. And you play those odds and you play those numbers. And I know it can be of great frustration, but it would be interesting to have some true serum with some of these guys that have been in the game for 30 years and say, is there part of you that wishes it could just go back to the old days?
Yeah, I'm sure quite a few of them would say that. They would kind of like the kind of leeway to be able to use their gut more. But, mm-hmm. I mean, and look, in this case, I don't know whether Scott's going to make it through this year or not. I don't know whether Scott's part of the problem. I don't know whether at some point it will be time for a change. But I don't think it will be because Scott's service didn't let the guys play in a way that, you know, the team wanted them to. I don't think that will end up being Scott's undoing. I don't think it will be a motivation issue because it's just, again, not really the way baseball is played. Like most things with managers, it will be the way the clubhouse functions, the effort that is put out,
and
the cleanliness of mm-hmm. the games. And if they keep getting picked off in key moments and they keep making as many errors as they've made and there are mental mistakes that go into it, Scott's probably not going to survive that because no manager survives that. Those are the types of reasons that managers end up changing.
Mm-hmm.
It's generally not because they don't let the players play, whatever that means. Because they follow the analytics or because they, you know,
don't motivate
when the team stops working hard. Remember Lloyd McClendon when he took them on their tour of the bases and then the next day they made five outs on the bases and you were like, okay, they're done with him. They've quit on their manager and want him out because they were so frustrated and angry. I don't see that from the Mariners at this moment today. But that's the type of thing that will obviously lead to that type of a change because you just can't have it. So we'll keep watching. We'll keep waiting. And I think those are actually some pretty decent points that have been brought up today.
And on my birthday, they're going to turn it around tonight.
Tonight. They're a whopping two games out of first place. So if they are able to do it, Brock, there is all sorts of runway in front of them.
Who's going to hit a home run on your birthday, Brock? Who is it? Who's it going to be?
Garver.
Julio's going to hit a home run on my birthday.
Okay. All right. That'll be very exciting.
All right, we'll come right back. It's time for some NFL draft talk. Brock's draft profile is next. A birthday version coming up on Brock and Salk.